Ecclesiastes, then, our studies in chapter 3, looking at the first 15 verses. And the situation is that Solomon has been stating loud and clear that life is meaningless. It's vanity, it's empty, it's chasing the wind, a waste of time, without God. Without God is a waste of time. Without God, you're chasing the wind. Without God, it's meaningless. But not with God. Now, he's qualified to speak to us about that subject because he's tried everything. You notice that in the first two chapters. He's tried everything. Music, pleasure, success, work, intellectual study, fame, fortune. Got it all. Been there. Done that. It's all empty. Without God, it's empty. We're struggling and striving to find meaning and purpose in life, but we'll never find it without God. But he's found a lot of other things. He gave himself to study this. He gave himself to concentrate. This is a philosophical study that he gave, and this is the result of his philosophical study that he set his heart to, that he spent time on studying and working it out, and he's left this on this legacy to us under inspiration. It's wonderful. So, just to encapsulate some of that 15 verses, let's read from verse 1 to 3. And for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up. What is planted? A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. And so on. Let's jump to verse 11 where he says, he has made everything beautiful in its time. And we'll read to the end of verse 14, okay? Also, he put eternity into man's heart, so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it so that people may fear before him. So it's a time for everything. Historians tell us, secular ones as well, secular ones perhaps particularly, when they look at the Bible, and look at life, and look at history, and they've said, and I've seen it, they said that if the Apostle Paul was born 30 years before when he was born, or 30 years after when he was born, the gospel of Jesus Christ would not have spread the way it did. The situation was so different. It was at a precise time that he was born, and that the opportunities he took that were then appropriate, available to him, that the gospel spread wonderfully. But it would not have been so 30 years earlier. It would not have been 30 years after. That's what historians say. I don't know. I'm just telling you what the secular historians have said about the gospel spreading in the Roman Empire at the time of the great Apostle Paul. Now, it's no wonder then that Solomon, the great philosopher, inspired by God, the man who got the wisdom, remember that dream? What do you want? Anything you have, you think wisdom. So he's wise, he knows about it all, and he's tried everything. It's no wonder he says, well, there's a season and a time for everything. There's a season and a time for every matter under heaven. We can do good things for a wrong time. And it doesn't do good. It does harm. There's a time for doing something right, as well as an occasion. You have to do it at the right time. Everything, the minutiae of life, the slightest movement of insects, of spiders, of the cattle, which I'll just mention in a moment. All these little things are of God, have a purpose, and are meaningful. Every little detail. Because God ordered it so. Now Solomon has just said how life seems to be in a real mess. Without order, without sense, as far as we can see things. As far as man can see, things are in chaos. Things are in a mess. And what I always find encouraging is to look at a new building that's been up. Just look at the chaos that's at our own Riverside for the building of that new V and A building. It's chaos. There's huge holes in the ground. There's pillars lying here and there. It's a mess. But then I'm not building it. I'm not the architect. I don't know what's going on. Thankfully, there are people who do know. God knows what's going on in his world, although it doesn't look like that for us. Known unto God are all his works. Known from of old. We have, I think it's the Apostle Paul, or is it Peter, in Acts chapter 15, quoting from Isaiah, that known from of old are God's works. Because he planned it. God knew from of old. Some things, knew everything, but he prophesies of some things that we know were going to happen. Paul told the Athenian philosophers that in God we live and move and move. Every time you move, God's in it. He's behind it. He gives you the strength. He gives you the energy. And we have our being, our existence through God. And he was saying that to philosophers, to the Cretans, to the poets. And he's quoting a poet from Crete, Epimenides or something like that. But he's a famous, well-known philosopher. Paul is quoting him, that even these men can see God in life. Can't make sense of it, perhaps, but they see there is that divine being. There's something stable, there's something secure going on. There must be something keeping everything together. There is a right time for everything to happen. You and I don't know, but God does. We only know a very little of why things happen. And we can only tell in retrospect. Looking back, we can see connections. In 1871, half of the inhabitants of Chicago in the USA were burned in a huge fire. Huge fire in Chicago, 1871. So that half of the inhabitants were burned. It started off, the fire started by a cow kicking over a lantern. The consequences of that cow kicking a lantern. Half the inhabitants of Chicago. It wasn't an accident to God. Every movement, even the movement of a cow kicking his hind legs. If Robert the Bruce, remember reading this, if Robert the Bruce did not look at the precise moment he looked when he was in that cave, depressed about how to tackle the battle against England at Bannockburn, I think it was that one. If he didn't look at that time and happened to see a spider, a little spider, trying to climb up a ledge in the cave where he was. And his eyes just fixed on that little spider. And he tried to get on the ledge, they didn't manage it, and he tried again, and he tried again, and he tried again, and he tried seven times. The seventh time he got on. That inspired Robert the Bruce. And I think it was the Battle of Bannockburn that he went on, inspired through that effort of the little spider to climb the ledge. And historians, I remember reading it, say that history would have been oh so different. History would have been so different. We read there about King Ahasuerus and Haman who promised to hang Mordecai, and who built a gallows for Mordecai. Built a gallows, he had it arranged that Mordecai would swing in that gallows in the morning or whenever. But on that night, the king could not sleep. On that very night, he couldn't sleep. And he asked for his secretaries to look out the books and the records, and he came across the record how Mordecai had saved two people, delivered the king's life, by exposing something he had discovered. And he said, what honour has we given to Mordecai for this? I didn't realise this. What have we done to Mordecai? That he that's such a wonderful thing, he saved my life. And they said nothing. And it transpired that the evil plot of Haman was discovered. On that night, the king could not sleep. It's a time for everything. Time for every little incident in life. All of us, I'm sure, can look back on our lives and point out to an incident which changed everything. One incident changed an awful lot of things that we didn't plan. It's God's world, friend, isn't it? It's God's world. We're midgets. How many times have we said, well, if only I didn't do that. Or if only I did that a day earlier. If I didn't misplace that ticket, I would have won the lottery. See what I mean? Everything's in keeping for the Lord. Everything's got a purpose and a reason. Well, Paul Solomon here gives us a list of things. A list of contrasts. Building, pulling down. Laughing, crying. Loving, hating. Tearing, sowing. The contrasts. That contrast, we're not always in the world, friends. Originally, there was only one element in life. A positive element. There was only joy, fulfillment in the world that God had created for Adam and Eve. Now there are two elements. There's not just construction. There's not just positive, glorifying things. There's destruction. There's negative things. Because sin has entered into the world. Sin has changed this world. It was never meant to have the tragedies that is in it. It's sin that has brought about the tragedies. Before the fall, there was no need to get rid of anything. We've got to put buckets out every week. Because there's trash. There wasn't trash, meant to be trash initially. Adam was to build and improve the earth. There was nothing to get rid of, but to make use of the things that were there. There was no such thing as illness, no such thing as dying before the fall. But a time to pluck up what is planted. We're going to spend the day tomorrow in the garden, and we'll be plucking up weeds. Didn't used to be there. Before Adam sinned. Time to break down. Time to weep. Didn't used to be like that before the fall. Now there's a time to heal, nevertheless. Time to build up, a time to do good things. Time and a place. So sin has changed the world and has made life a lot more difficult. We can't just go ahead and start doing things because first of all we've got to remove rubble. We don't just go and plant. This farmer doesn't just go and plant and sow his seed. He gathers up the stones first, doesn't he? He's got to get rid of the rubbish first. And then sow on the field. Time to cast away stones. So time to throw and get rid of the stones. There's evil at work now in the world. There's evil at work. I hardly need to say that. It's a long time since I was so depressed as on Friday night. Seeing the 10 o'clock news. How terrible things were happening in France, but in Tunisia, and the Supreme Court's decision. It was all depressing. There's evil in the world now. We need to acknowledge that. There might not have been decay. There's decay in the world as well. As well as evil, there's decay. And there might not have been decay. If Adam hadn't sinned, there might not have been decay in the world. I don't know. I mean, what I mean is that you can have a brand new suit. You buy a brand new suit and put it in a cupboard, leave it for 50 years. And go and look, get it. And you'll find the collar frayed. You'll find the cuffs frayed. It hasn't been used. Because there's this principle of decay in the universe now. Because of sin. Sin's a problem. Sin has made life more complicated as well as more difficult, more complicated. You can't just sort out things. It's not just simple now. Things are complex. So many people trying to do good, social workers are unsuccessful very often in helping people because the first assumption they have is, well, man is good. A child is born. There's nothing wrong with him. And he's good. He just needs a good environment. He just needs good teaching. He just needs right teaching. And everything will be fine. It doesn't work. It's complicated. Because there's decay, there's sin and wickedness in the world. Man has a corrupt heart, although he is born with a smile on his face. How often did we see, we saw it just last week, didn't we? This fellow who was killing the people in the church. He's a nice guy. Can't believe you do it. But there's sin in the world. It's lurking. In the dark, we don't know. Sin is there. Until it expresses itself. We need good theology to understand life and to put things right. We need good theology. So Solomon starts off his list by reminding us there's not just a time to be born, but there's a time to die. We humans think maybe we can control population growth. We can control overpopulation, so let's make rules. China's made rules, there's can only have so many children. You can only have one sex and so on. We can have birth control now. And we control euthanasia, we can get rid of the people who are causing us a problem. Well, that will happen, although it's not the intention at the moment. With birth control and abortion and mercy killings and surrogacy and so on, we think we can control when how many births, how many deaths. No. God brings to birth. God brings his people home to himself. God controls it. Just as sin came into the world through one man and death through sin, so death spread to all men. Because all men have sinned. Now, surprisingly, it tells us there's a time to hate. There's a time to hate. Solomon said elsewhere, the fear of the Lord is what? Hatred of evil. We don't love evil. We love good, but we hate evil. There's a time to hate evil, to hate wickedness. And there's plenty of it just now. Solomon said that the whole object of life is to fear God and keep his commandments. Have you ever wondered? All the commandments are negative. All the commandments are negative, except for remember the Sabbath day. Don't steal, don't lie, don't commit adultery, and so on. Most of them are negatives. Why? Because sin disrupts life. Sin causes the problems. And if we stop sinning, there'll be less trouble. Honestly. If we stop sin, there'll be less trouble. It's the way we deal with sin as well. Not just the sin, but the wrong philosophies we have in applying how to bring help and healing to it. Sin disrupts the world. Sin's a problem. And that's why it says that the righteous person, the good person, the godly person hates falsehood, he hates lying, and deception, The evil person says, well, everyone does it. It'll be good for me. So he does it, whether it's truth or right or good. He does it because others do it. We all do it. We're easily influenced. The Lord Jesus from heaven, he praised the church at Ephesus for hating the works of the Nicolaitans, hating what they did. There's a time to hate evil works, evil philosophy, evil work. Righteousness, by its very nature, must hate evil. Righteousness, by its very nature, must hate evil. By hating evil, you're confirming your love for the right, for the good. And it's because there is just this unrightness that we need to preserve it. And that's why there's a time of war, a right time to go to war. There's a time to go to war. When justice has been denied, we have to fight against injustice. We have to fight to preserve the right and the good, to protect innocence, because evil is lurking there. We need to preserve goodness and truth. We have a duty to preserve it. The whole economic system of Israel was built around the protection of good and truth and the promotion of good and truth. It was productive. It was beneficial to do good. It didn't pay you to do bad. The whole economic system of Israel, the books of Exodus and so for that culture, some of it we can't understand because culture's changed. But the commands there that were given were for the benefit of good. Some of the punishment that we have is the removal of the protection and our exposure to evil. That's some of the judgments that come upon a nation. The removal of protection for innocence. Protection for the good. Now, there's a time to be silent. There's a time to be silent, verse 7. There's a time when we could say things. There's a time when we want to say things. But it ought not to be said at that time. We need to know that. We need to believe that. It takes grace, the grace of God, to keep quiet when we want to spill the beans and expose someone. It's not the right time. That's why we need to pray every day, friends. That's why we need to commit our day to God when we rise in the morning. Be with me today, Lord. Keep me in all situations that I'll find myself. Help me to remember you, to remember you and what you've said. There's never a time to spread evil about people. There's never a time to do harm. We do a lot of harm by spreading bad things about people. The world itself has coined a proverb. The least said, the easiest mended. So it's time to keep silent. But it's a time to speak out too. It's a time when we ought to speak. And one of the most enlightening things as student of divinity that we had in our course was the study of the larger catechism. How it went into detail of the commandments, what's required, what's forbidden. The duties of the ninth commandment. We have to defend the innocence of our enemy. We have to defend the innocency of our enemy, as well as of our neighbour, the one who's harmed us. We have to support him when he's in the right, and not just speak about him because he's hurt us and wish him ill. Time to speak out and defend innocency. It's a time to promote the good name of our neighbour. We have to promote the good name of our neighbour. We have to do things to advance and promote it. Sometimes that's when we're silent, because we don't like him. That's not right. See the work of grace that's required in our souls. How the Spirit of Christ needs to come into our hearts and make us better people. Make us better people. We have to have a charitable esteem of our neighbour, and we have to cover his infirmities, his faults. We have to cover his faults as if he didn't have them. Isn't that lovely? Covering the infirmities of our neighbour and those who've done us harm. These are things that are required in the ninth commandment. You see, these Puritans had a tremendous depth in their understanding righteousness and goodness. Well then, the last part of our passage, it talks about to rejoice. Christianity, friends, is not a killjoy. It's a time to laugh, a time to dance. It's a time to laugh, a time to dance. Verse 4. God wants us to be happy. God appointed 3 special festivals for rejoicing for his people Israel. 3 festivals to celebrate, not to mourn. The book of Deuteronomy, if I were to ask you, what's the book of Deuteronomy about? You know what I would say? The law of God. Well, it's the very name. Deuter, second, nomi, law. Law. But it tells you there, 10 times it tells us to rejoice. 2 times it says that God rejoices over you. You are my special people. God really wants you and I to enjoy our Christian life. What gain has the worker from his toil? We should have a lot of gain if we trust God and work things out for him. If we do it his way, if we listen to him, we will be blessed. And then in verse 10, he tells us that God has made everything, not some things, but everything beautiful in its time. There's a story told, a true story as far as I understand, of a man and his wife who had a lovely daughter, young child, baby. Well, a bit more than a baby, I think. And they're out in the car and there's a crash and the child was killed. And they were broken hearted and they went home and they cursed God. They were not believers. And they went back to the place of the accident. And they stood at it and they said, cursed place. Cursed place. Cursed place. But you know, as time went on, they began to think about their child. Where was the child? Why was the child born? Where's the child now? What's life about? And they began to think. And ultimately, they were converted to Jesus Christ. They were born again. And they had a newness of life. A complete newness of life that Paul speaks about to the Romans, I think. And so they went back to that place where the accident happened. And they stood and looked at it. And they said, beautiful place. Beautiful place. Beautiful place. God has made everything beautiful in his time. In his time. We don't know what lies ahead, friend. But the tragedies that have happened to you could be blessings yet. It was for that couple. Beautiful place. Everything's in its time. Things will turn out. You see, all things work together for good. Together with what happens down the road. 5 years later, 10 years later, whatever. All things work together, not in isolation. Everything works together for good to those who love God. I've repeated before you before, because I love it. I'm going to say it again. Beautiful poem that strengthens me. Not talks about the weaver's loom. Not till the loom is silent and the shuttles cease to fly, shall God unroll the canvas and explain the reason why the dark threads are as needful in the skillful weaver's hands as the threads of gold and silver in the pattern he has planned. The tragedies of life can be blessings too. God has put eternity in a man's heart. My friend, you know how long you have to live? You have to live as long as God lives. You have to live as long as God lives. So have you. God has put eternity into our hearts. The death that we have here is not death at all. We never die, really. We live forever. And Solomon's conclusion is that there's nothing better for us to do than to be joyful and to do good as long as we live. That everything should eat and drink and take pleasure in our work, what God has given to us. This is God's gift. What you can do, enjoy it. Do it for God. Do it to His glory. Do it to His glory. God gifted to man happiness. Christ purchased happiness on the cross for us. He purchased peace, joy, happiness. That was part of the joy that was set before him that helped him endure the cross. And so you and I must make people happy. Everyone you meet, let's make them happy. With truth, not error. Note where our security comes from. The stability of God. The unchangeableness of God. God's not wimpish. It doesn't come from a wimpish God who's crushed by what's happened in the world. God is not today. What am I going to do about the ISIS? What am I going to do? God is not hurt by it, friends. God's not moved by things that are outside of himself. He is the unique, eternal God from everlasting to everlasting. Things he's created can't go and kill him. He is not affected by the what's outside himself. And yet he still has love and mercy. He still suffers. He suffered with the people when his people are, he suffers, but it's from within himself. It's not from something coming out with him. It's from his nature being such of pure. These things are not right. But he's not weakened by anything that happens in the earth, in the cosmos. Our strength comes from the unchangeableness of God who rules the universe. He endures forever. Whatever God does endures forever. It lasts. It lasts forever and ever. When he makes a plan, he doesn't change it. Our government will change its plans. The European government, Europe will change their plans because of the circumstances that have arisen that they didn't anticipate. Nothing has taken God by surprise. Plenty takes governments by surprise. And they change their plans. Not God. Because he endures forever. He's from everlasting to everlasting. And he's planned everything. God fulfills his plans. You can see some things. You know, even Zeresh, the wife, and the wise men that we read off there in Esther, verse 13. And Haman told his wife, Zeresh, and all his friends, everything that had happened to him. He says, my time turns, plans all overturned. My plan is all overturned. Everything's happened to him. Then his wise men, not with the wisdom of God, but nevertheless, with the wisdom they got from God, they can see something. Some of them got truth, you see, it's so clear. But his wife Zeresh too, said, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of the Jewish people. See how the Jews were seen as special? God's special people. If Mordecai is a Jew, you've had it. Because God doesn't change his plan. The enemies of the Jews will be crushed. the enemies of the Jews would be destroyed. Even Zeresh knew that. His wife. His ungodly wife. You know, our enemies have got truth. They've got truth. They see it sometimes. If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of the Jewish people, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him. Whose side are you on? Surely God's. Surely we're on God's side. God is not affected by the terrible things that have been happening, by the Tunisia crimes. But he knows they're evil, and he'll deal with them ultimately. Maybe in this life, maybe not. But they will be. Because God lives forever. And God is just. And God is patient. And God is long-suffering. He is. He really is. That's why he sent Jesus. Because he loves us. He wants us to be saved. Jesus Christ went to the cross because of the inbuilt love of God, which endures forever. The love of God. His plan from of old. His plan from of old. The eternal love. The eternal love of God from the foundation of the world. That's what sent Jesus. And that's the greatest historical event that's ever taken place. Calvary's cross 2,000 years ago. That's stability. That's where your hope is, isn't it? That's where our hope is tonight. And may God grant it always would be. Well, may God bless his word. For everything, there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die. Time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. Time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down. And a time to build up. He has made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Verse 14, I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, not anything taken from it. God has done it so that people fear before him. And may God bless his word then. And let's have a few moments of silence as we ask God to make us wise and to make use of our time.